Welcome back to another episode of Research VR Podcast. Today we are joined by Kyle Monti and Martin Hawley, co-founders of Striker VR, and Mike Murdoch, co-founder of TriHelix VR. I'm glad you guys are here.
I'm glad we're here too. Yeah. Nice. And that it's Friday.
Totally. We have some beers cracked open. We're kicking back. And you guys are actually, I just found you guys stumbling around the Upload Collective. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we have a super awesome way of tracking Gear VRs and peripherals. And we're here to show off a really cool haptic gun that you can use in with a face-based system. So Martin and Kyle, why don't you guys just reiterate a little bit about what Striker VR is, and Mike, you can then say what TriHelix is.
Well, Striker VR is haptic peripherals. So we have come up with an amazing way to generate haptics, and we're delivering recoil and, you know, really strong hits, so tertiary haptic effects as well. The ability to create sort of, or block things with shields, tertiary haptic effects.
What is tertiary haptic effects?
Yeah. So right now we're messing around with the SDK, and you can inject code from like the system, like the actual running game,
okay,
and have the motor move arbitrarily. So if there's an explosion,
okay,
it doesn't just have to, like, you know, it can insert that while, you know, your gun's recoiling.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that sounds really promising. And how does TriHelix come into the fold here?
So we're working on the tracking side of things. There's you know, the term that emerged, room scale VR, where that's for your living room. We want to go big. And the way to do that is get more people in so you can play with your friends in a large arena scale experience. And so we've partnered with a company called PhaseBase, and they build this amazing state-of-the-art tracking system that's been used by people like NASA, like Disney, like Boeing, on the research side. And we said, let's bring it to VR. Let's make that the, like, best tracking system for arena scale VR. And so we're working with Striker VR to bring that haptic, the blaster they're making, into the fold, so that if people want to make these experiences, they get the blaster from Striker, they use our tracking system and SDK, and off you go. Just go make amazing arena scale VR.
So what TriHelix is doing is taking this kind of research grade tracking system, the face-based system, which has been used in everything from, I think, research to the movie industry.
That's right, right, yeah.
And essentially you're taking all of the hardware and bringing forth like an SDK for VR, right? You're bringing that whole technology for virtual reality.
That's right. Yeah, so I think like FaceBase has an amazing advantage. They were built from the ground up to do real-time application. So this has been used for like telerobotics. Can I operate a robot over there using this controller in my hand over here to sub-millimeter precision?
The controller in your hand, is it? I mean, wouldn't you rather be tracking your arm and then the robot mimicking that? Or, I mean, why are you using mocap for doing telerobotics?
So
not mimicking your own body?
Yeah, that's a good point. So partially, you don't really need to track the full arm. The anatomy is different in the robotic arm and the joint orientation.
Okay.
So really, you want to know just where the robotic arm is grabbing the object, but you don't care about the rest of it, because my arm extends from my shoulder, which extends to my elbow, and that's, you know, mounted on my torso.
Right.
But the robotic arm is mounted on the ground, so the anatomy is different, but you want to make sure you still have that sense of precision.
So I thought, so my impression was that you're tracking the controller, but what you're actually saying is that you're using FaceBase to track the robot itself and where. Am
both.
I getting it?
Yeah, both.
Both.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, it's been used on both sides of the tracking. Now, I've been digging through, because I'm working on some videos for their SIGGRAPH stuff, and I've been digging through their archive of footage, and I'm like, whoa, you mean this was, like, used on Harmonix for Dance Revolution?
Oh, interesting.
Guitar Hero stuff. Like, yeah, it's been used a lot for that. Skyrim did some mocap for it. And then, have you seen the Bot and Dolly stuff?
No.
So that was like this company used robotic arms to do cinematography. So what they did is they put it's a crazy cool setup. So they took the choreographed the sequence, and then they filmed it with an actual like camera, put the FaceBase markers on it, and then took all that data back into a program like Maya, and then found out how to map that to a robotic arm.
So, wow.
So you can have that human feeling of cinematography, yeah. but one of the like auto assembly robots driving it. Wow. And then you can do crazy choreographed stuff that wouldn't be possible without this type of mocap.
I love that. And you know, that totally brings me to something I just tried in VR. And the thing that really excites me about VR is that it gives you the ability, the tools, to do things that you're never able to do. Yes, there's experiences, empathy, machine, whatever. But
we're nerds.
But we're nerds. We want to make some really cool things that we wouldn't be able to do. I just played with an app called Tavori. Shout out to these guys in Russia, actually. It's essentially a little animation tool where you can grab the little objects, like the car or the people, and you can move it with your hand, and you're recording that movement. But not only that, but you can actually grab a camera, a virtual camera, and then move that hand like a handheld camera.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
That's really similar to what you're talking about. And then when you replay that camera movement, it's like a very natural hand, kind of, it has the jittery of the hand, and I am using right. the Vive. But like it's like you will never be able to do that in a 2D screen without using a mouse. It's literally move the camera in a really natural and smooth way through a virtual environment.
That's cool.
So we're going to that part essentially where we get you. Essentially, the tools are going into 3D space with you so that you can grab them, move them, and you don't have to give it X, Y values of.
Yeah, you just film it and you be a human and the computer speaks your language.
Right. So face space is cool. It sounds like it's a really interesting type of tracking.
It's super cool.
Why? So what's up with Oculus and Vive not doing... So this seems like this has existed way before any of the VR headsets, right? Like this was before. So why isn't this already used? So actually, before we go there, what is face space's tracking like? It's, you're talking about RF?
It's a good point because they've been like this crazy unique system that that certain companies just need that sort of speed and precision, and certain companies don't. And that's one of the reasons is their clients like worldwide have been the most demanding motion capture applications out there, from robotics to telerobotics and VR, for example.
So you're talking about face space and how the tracking works,
yeah,
and what's yeah. Well, why is it already not integrated?
Partially is they've really focused on their research clients. You know, the institutions that need something crazy fast for real time. Interestingly enough, like Palmer Luckey worked at a lab running face based tech, so that partially like they had positionally tracked VR and AR before it existed.
Right.
You know, they were one of those companies that made it happen. And when we came along and we were looking at different tracking systems, we're like, you mean this is already running at nearly 1,000 frames per second and it's like built for real time? Let's use that because nothing else on the planet can do that.
So, okay, so this is great for things like rooms, and I think what you guys really want to do is like track multiple people per room.
Absolutely.
Right? That's what arcades and the Void kind of really bank on, is that you can have shared spaces, not through networks, but actually through real physical shared spaces. How does Striker VR kind of play into this? And what do you see, how do you see the benefit coming about?
Just kind of from my experience and, I've noticed that, like, you know, a lot of people have played with hands, for instance. So, like, you have a lot of different companies trying to track the hands to, you know, either insert, you know, fake hands into
right.
the virtual environment, so it gives you a feeling of presence. And what our technology does, it gives you the ability to interact with a real prop, for instance, right? So whether it be, like, kind of like, you know, a blaster or, you know, a tennis racket, you know, anything to kind of draw you further into the environment. And then on top of that, we have the haptics for that physical thing, that object, to make you fool you into
right.
believing that thing that you're holding and you're seeing in VR is actually, you know, what you want to see.
One of the most important things is that with that haptic peripheral, you can then touch other virtual objects and be fooled into the idea that you're actually hitting a tennis ball or shooting a laser gun or bullet, if you will.
Right.
So.
Right, and like, you know, I think we were talking earlier about like, you know, injecting code like arbitrarily into the motor. So if there's an explosion in the background.
Right.
Right. So, you know, what?
Even simple things like bumping into a wall.
Right. Like. Right. Or like turning like, you know, like your peripheral sideways, it turns into a shield. And now, you know, you can feel like, you know, maybe a robot banging on the right and the left. With the haptic feedback.
So we've been working on this for a while. The first Oculus Connect, I think we went and all we had was our haptic device. It was not connected to any sort of experience, and that's because there was no tracking available. And so that's what brought us together with Trihelix is their ability to show us and kind of be our tracking Sherpas, which is, they've been doing a really great job of being Sherpas. Our tracking Sherpas.
It's so meta on so many beautiful levels.
And when I saw you guys last Trihelix, you guys had Nerf guns and swords. So was that something you guys were building and kind of developing?
They built Nerf guns because
we didn't talk to them yet.
Oh, no, so that was before.
Actually, they were talking to us, and they were just waiting for our thing, and so they used Nerf guns. So
and now their thing is a thing, and we've got one, and it's awesome.
It's really cool. God, like. I don't know. It never really interested me when I would see these things on you know, articles and whatnot. Like, okay, cool. You know, they're building a glove. They're building a gun. There's even one for PlayStation, right? PSVR, kind of a gun there. But then the thing that really sold me, and which is why I really wanted to do this interview with you guys, is like, holy crap, like, you're holding the gun that has weight to it, and then you shoot it, and you feel that recoil. Like, the recoil really... adds to the full immersion of things.
And it doesn't look like a plumbing tube.
It does not. It looks like an assault rifle.
From Halo.
Oh,
okay, yeah. From Halo. Looks like. Laser gun.
Well, I mean, so to dive into the nerdy side a little bit, like, so there's different approaches at doing haptics for gaming. There's the motors that rumble. There's the things that just buzz a little bit.
Right.
And really what makes Striker VR unique is it gives you, like, that impact, that ting, when it happens. So you don't feel something like, oh, a gun went off or a grenade explosion, and you feel a little bit of a rumble. You feel impact. You feel that sharp, like, ting. Right. Like, if you play tennis, that bing.
Yeah.
And that's something that... It's not a diffused experience. It's not like, you know, subtle rumble.
Haptics,
it's an impact.
Right.
So onomatopoeia, if you don't already know, is the easiest way to explain haptics. A lot of really weird sounds will come out when you're trying to explain haptics.
It's more like a bing or a zap.
It's a chunky. So we've diversified our language when it comes to that.
We're not even... I feel like I'm in The Sims. They don't speak English. They're like, whoa, Vavashne. Yeah. That's the language.
That's the language of haptics. Well, I mean, this is actually a really good point that it's... A lot of haptic is tied in with audio, and it's almost like the sensation of everything is the tactile and the audio together.
Yeah.
Into creating that. It's same thing as, like, think of what taste is like, or flavor. It's taste and smell kind of combined together.
Right.
And, you know, all the other multimodal things. So, again, VR, the more immersive you want to get, the more multimodal you want to get with your sensory inputs. So, here's the question. How do you integrate a gun being shot from one player to the other person getting shot and feeling the thump of getting shot? What is...
So right now, like, you know, we don't really cover, like, you know, for instance, like, I think it's a Subpack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do, you know, transducers, and they can kind of, like, make it feel like impact everywhere. We can do things on the peripheral, like, you know, wherever that motor's tied.
Oh, on your gun.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if you translate, like, say, an explosion or something like that, like, the gun shaking, and then you're holding the gun, and you might be holding it relatively close to your body, so you
right.
are shaking.
So, let's even get away from, like, what... we have currently, or even like, even if you've seen things on the fringes, like what's being done on the research or the R&D side of tactile, like, because you guys aren't really involved with, like, the consumer end of things. It's more know, these are expensive rigs that you'll have at these VR arcades that, you know, you'll wear the laptop. What do you call it? A backpack?
I think, yeah. I think it was coined by The Void.
That's great.
To be fair. But yeah, it's a backpack laptop.
And, you'll you know, that obviously has, like, straps that go around it, which you guys, I guess you can have a vest. So how do you how can you get some really good tactile feedback of the environment having an effect on you, not just through your hands and the gun, but on your body? Like, what do you guys think?
I definitely think, vests, like, you know, the vests that are available. It's got to be, like, something that has some physicality to it, you know, like, right. Sound works, running into physical objects, like, you know, the Void.
Running into a wall is like running into a wall.
For those things, you really don't have to simulate it through your hand.
Skinning virtual environments is a good, you know, way to go. Right. Where I guess modular environments would be.
Well, I'd say too, like, there's a range of feedback. Actually, like, vibrating something or using a linear motor like Striker is one approach. But setting up wind systems that blow wind in your face can help sell that experience. So, like, we are really good at all these different sensations, and I think the Void uses, like, misters as well to make you feel like you're outside, make the air feel like a different quality.
Right.
And so this haptic ability or experience is not just, like, one of your senses. It's trying to hit as many of them as possible and link that to what's happening in virtual reality, right, so that you can sell that experience. Like, your brain checks in, it's like, okay, well, my eyes see this sort of thing. Is that happening? And your body's saying, like, yep, I'm getting the feedback. It's real.
Cool. One thing that really kind of comes to mind, especially with these physical installations, I guess this is kind of going into business end of things. I guess, do you guys see that this type of technology is, like, hard and really expensive to have even in the next couple of years, so that these VR arcades will stay afloat in terms of the hardware that they're building?
I mean, you know, my impression is that, like, I think it's genius that, you know, FaceBase and Trihelix are going to a mobile platform. I think that, yes, like, for a number of years, you know, call it 5 years or whatever, like, you'll have digital out-of-home brick and mortar experiences, right, that, like, you know, have this high-end stuff that's expensive. But you know, the more they iterate on mobile platforms, the faster it's going to go to in-home.
Well, just look at what happened from, I believe it was 1982 to 1984. I think we went from 1,000 arcades or something like that to 14,000 arcades in 2 years, right? And so you think about...
But then where are they now?
Right, exactly. However, the opportunity for networking arcade games to in-home experiences wasn't there. So there's an opportunity to link home systems with arcade systems. And then at the same time, there's an opportunity to, be able to bring your peripherals home and play with them at home, practice, and then bring them back to the arenas.
And mod them.
Right, and mod them crazy. Okay, so
that's an interesting thing you just opened up there, where you are connecting people at home to these arcades.
Right, and so the arcades might stick around after the 2-year explosion that's about to happen, or 3-year explosion that's about to happen. And at the same time, those numbers that from 1982 to 1984, the 1,000 to 14,000, that was in a time when only America really had computers. So now what happens when the entire world, what's the size of that market? You know, what's the...
Especially if it's on Gear VR.
Right.
Mobile. I mean, like, so it's using the technology at time for the right entertainment platform. Like, American Idol is cell phone plus TV. And you can vote and you can influence what's happening on that screen, which is an amazing experiment, and it worked. So now we get this opportunity to design arcades plus internet plus real-time gaming, plus mobile. So there's any number of ways to link those together, and it's just about finding the right combination.
So this internet you're talking about, that's actually a big focus of these arcades, is to connect it to the internet, to have this, literally a shared, maybe even have multiple arcades around the world in the same arena.
I mean, we would love to have,
like Japan versus America.
Versus America. They're each in their own arcades, and they're playing this game together, you know, and I think that sort of evolution of esports is very intriguing, where athleticism all of a sudden comes back into gaming. This team is trying to obtain this player because they're taller and faster and stronger and that sort of thing. Like, that's what would be so awesome for games to happen. It, like, combining physical movement and all the affordances of video games.
So with the first Oculus, you were kind of crawling around on the floor like a baby, you know? And then now you keep moving further and iterating, and now we're kind of walking around. There will be a time when you can be an Olympic athlete inside a VR.
Absolutely. And whether that's through, like, exaggerated, you know, arm and foot movement, I think, you know, you probably don't have to complete the full motion itself.
Right.
But rather have, you know, move your arm up a little bit, but then that will actually have your avatar doing some crazy stunt move.
Right.
You know, I think that has honestly some legs, and I've seen some research behind that.
YYXX.
Right. Yeah. You know, but it's with your arm.
Up, down, down, left, right, left, right.
So, you guys are really in an interesting space with VR, because I think the majority of the market is really focused on, like, how do we get this to consumers in the homes and their something simple. And you guys are like, no, we can play with some really expensive rigs, some high-end stuff, and see how far we can really push this forward. So, like, this is not even just mobile VR to desktop VR, but this is, like, beyond desktop. It's actually back to mobile, but, like, but with a lot more hardware that comes with it.
There's also, like, we're kind of biased for at least the American market here, and we're like, oh, arcades are dead. And, like, nobody does arcades. And then you look at net cafes, and you look at Japan, and you're like, oh, arcades are huge. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, it's about finding those right markets where the consumer behavior already exists. Like, let's go play some Counter-Strike for a couple hours in this net cafe. And really what we're saying is, go have an experience like nothing you've seen before in this virtual arcade.
So for people as ignorant as I am, like, I guess I lived in another country before, and, like, internet cafes were really fun, but, like, ever since being here, you think they're all dead. What have you guys been seeing on your market research side that, like, you see this becoming definitely a thing in other countries that do have, like, vibrant arcade communities?
So since we've sort of put out our press about our different, you know, our haptic rifle, we've gotten calls from around the world, from people who want to set up virtual reality arcades, you know, and we have to send back an email that says, what HMD are you using, what tracking are you using, are you creating your own content, and what's your timeline? You know, and a lot of the times you get back messages that are just like, well, we're just now exploring it. We're going to do it. We already have a paintball arena, or we already have a, you know, we're the world's largest something or other in the UK, you know, a play center or something like that, you know. So what we're finding a lot is that they're all just flirting with the idea, and they're ready to do it, but they're researching. And so, you know, you look at a company like Trihelix and Phase Space, and they've got some great solutions, and you know, and actually that comes to a sore point for us, which is, you know, there really aren't enough executable tracking solutions out there right now, or that we have access
to.
What else
is there, so, other than Phase Space?
Well, you have the Vive, but, I mean, you've seen, like, people, like, have articles where they're literally duct taping the controllers
right.
to shoes.
Right. To shoes, yeah. The dogs, the trash cans.
The dog one was
good. The dog was great.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It was
the people behind Hover Junkers.
Yeah, Stress Level Zero. Yeah. That was awesome.
they had a model of, like, a really funny, it was like a creature from a
slug
their
or something, yeah.
Slug that they attached to the controller, which they attached to their dog. And so every time the dog would walk into their play space, you would just see the little critter just like, and they could play with it. It was amazing. So I've always been kind of advocating for, like, the peripheral side of VR, or at least to bring real life objects into the experience with you. Everything from your phone, which I want to be able to be in my Vibe, but pull out my phone from my pocket, but then actually have a virtual, like, extended display of my phone kind of come up there. I do that motion many times. I, like, literally pick up my phone and then I realize I can't see it.
I've seen that so many times. I've done it myself.
Right. I think the problem is that all of these larger sort of guys who are moving very quickly, the Oculus and HTC specifically, they're sculpting something.
Yeah.
They're making something, they're defining their thing. They're, you know, and they've been working toward it so long. So I just, you know, I hope that they open it up soon. But
yeah.
I realize they're sculpting their thing right now.
And I think that's absolutely right. Like, you know, these guys, you know, they're doing the HMDs, like, basically everything that was promised in the 80s. Like, they're doing right now, you know, they're painting the mountains, and, like, you know, these are going to be, like, the trees next.
Wow.
You know? Like, it's going to be those subtle...
Wait,
you know,
who's that painter? Was that a reference?
Bob Ross.
Was that a Bob Ross?
Happy little trees. Happy little trees, yeah. Happy little VR trees.
Happy little peripherals over here on the mountain.
Does anybody do like a tote brush painting show yet?
Yeah. Well, isn't like a great idea. Video show?
There needs to be a tote brush painting
show. A Bob
show.
Ross. Tilt brush.
Tippitan seems to be doing a lot of that. He's an insanely good artist, especially in tilt brush. Maybe put him in tilt brush.
Well, I just saw he's playing with the Oculus Medium stuff now. Yes, doing more sketching. Now that looks so cool.
Yeah, I think the thing that the Medium has that tilt brush doesn't have is 3D. What do you call it? Like 3D objects that you're painting. Rather than just flat paint. I've seen people do like real. They look like kind of clay models that people are building, like claymation. But it looks it's an Oculus Medium. Okay, so another question I have for you guys, since you guys are all very involved with like Gear VR, is where is mobile VR going, and why is it going to be essentially? So your phone is a supercomputer, but like I don't think the answer is going to be to slot it into an HMD, but rather using it in your pocket with some kind of wire coming out of it as an external GPU and everything to like a small little device you put on your head. Am I right or am I wrong?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
Yeah. It solves so many of the problems. So, like, what's the input for mobile VR? It's like, well, if I put my phone on my face, then I can't touch the screen anymore.
Right.
But if you've got your phone in your pocket, you can use that as, like, the built-in input device to reach into that virtual world.
Right.
And then right now, do we really need to have the processor and the battery on your face as well? All you need is the gyro, the IMU, the tracking cameras.
Which the Gear already has, right? It has a lot of the internal IMUs. Or is it more, it uses the phone's IMUs plus the...
It's got its own as well. And its internal one runs super fast. So it helps fuse the sensor data. That's what we're looking forward to, is like dropping all that weight from the HMD.
Retinal projection, right?
Well, I've seen awesome stuff of like, if you can assemble lenses on the micro level, you can make something that's super flat but has the same optical properties as the thick lenses they're using now. So you can get that weight of the lenses and that huge bulkiness down a ton as well.
So you're saying the step beyond Fresnel lenses is these micro lenses?
It's just this, essentially assembling the lenses with the same optical properties as the big lenses. You can flatten them quite a bit.
Essentially a light field display that they're calling?
I think it's still a lens. Like, that would still be considered a lens. What Magic Leap is doing is something
different. They're a waveguide with, like, a scanning fiber display.
They've definitely talked about, like, using kind of, like, those solutions, like, in order to get their waveguides, like, super lightweight so they can actually stick it on somebody's face. At least to my knowledge.
Yeah. So, effectively, you also lose the God rays of Fresnel lenses, which everyone dreads currently. But, you know, growing pains, I think.
That's a Reddit article.
I know. Reddit killed Oculus.
Yeah, so many God rays all over the place.
But I think that also goes back to design of the actual experiences. Maybe, you know, don't use as much black backgrounds with a completely contrasting white title. You know, like, maybe reverse it into, like, a white background with a black title. Why not? Then you won't have as much God rays. Right?
Yeah, you know, like, VR... designing for VR has been an interesting journey for me. Because, you kind of have to put on the headset with a very rough experience that you're building and then let it speak to you, because you can be in that space spatially. So you're like, no, this feels a little bit too close. Let me push it away. Okay, that feels better. And the same thing with the optics and the tracking right now. You have to say, like, no, I'm not in the metaverse right now. I'm not in the Matrix. It's like, what is this thing really good for? And let's make that experience just perfect and polish that.
You know what it would actually be? This comes back to VR development, especially having to play test this over and over again, and you have to take the headset on and off and on and off, and you just leave it on your head. What would actually be really cool is using augmented reality, where you're sitting in front of your computer, but you can actually see your hands typing and you're doing your things, but rapidly prototyping what it feels like to have something in front of you, even though it's not immersive, but it's just to kind of see the spatial dimensions of things. That's actually one point that, like, augmented reality developers have been saying, is like, oh, I don't have to take it off my head to, like, develop more and then see what I'm building.
Yeah, like, from the AR stuff that I've tried, it's this amazing feeling of, like, when you put on a VR headset, for example, you're like, all right, I'm going to this place, I'm going in VR, and the rest of the world is not there. And with AR displays, it's like, what I'm working with, this magical image that's in front of me, is here with me.
Right.
It's in the same space as me, rather than I'm going someplace else to experience it. So it's a perfect use for augmented to say, I need this content that I'm working on here with me in my in the space with because then I can iterate faster, I can make more informed design decisions, and then maybe I'll go into VR to test it.
Another comes back to peripherals. Do you think the Vive is essentially a good platform to develop any kind of peripherals on? Even if, so I know you guys were talking about the IMUs being thrown off by how much movement there is in the gun, but like, do they have a good enough platform to have peripherals?
I mean, they have a very strong platform. I mean, it's cool what they've done. I mean, if you've like gone and looked at any of the lab experiences that are on the Vive, like especially the bow and arrow one, like the haptics that come out of there to make you, it really draws you into it, makes it feel like a very complete experience. So like, yeah, depending on what you're doing, like right now with this iteration of those controllers, I would say that, yeah, it's a cool platform for some other peripherals, maybe not ours right now, but when they do release other things, they can correct the IMU stuff, so anybody can develop, so it's cool.
So the Vive controllers, in my eyes, they're really, they're kind of whispering, you know? They're that more little, and we're screaming, right? So we're excited, you know, for the possibility that people might start opening tracking up to third-party peripherals to let developers of any type of game content get really excited and do some different things. I mean, we've reached out to who's the group that made Space Pirate Trainer? Because we'd like to get our gun into their game, and they've kind of said that they might be interested in doing it. So it'll be fun. I think one of the things that will do is it'll actually allow people to say, okay, well, we've tried it with just the Vive controllers, and now we're trying it with a heavier haptic peripheral, and what does that get to feel? You know, what does that feel like? So that just to see the variation will be good for us.
That's I guess promising to see that. I guess HTC also had in mind that maybe this can be a platform for them to have peripherals on. I don't know how much the Rift can support peripherals. I guess technically they can, right? It just has to be a light emitting. It has to have embedded LEDs inside.
I mean, you can strap it to your shoe. You can strap it to peripherals. So I mean, they're gonna come out with something, you know.
But currently, the Vive, even if you attach a third controller, which it can't track it wirelessly because for some, I think that's a Steam VR thing where like I literally have to have the third controller. Yeah, so we're sitting in a mixed reality green screen studio where to have the controller move with you or the camera to move with you, you need a controller strapped to it with just a USB plugged into the computer for it to just recognize the third controller. But it tracks it once it is. So I don't know why by design they can't have multiple things be tracking, but I hope they open it up soon. I mean, what's your expectations with...
I mean, you know, I've read all kinds of things. Martin's read all kinds. I mean, you know, people are talking about the next, like, you know, anywhere between, like, you know, 18 and 24 months, you're going to see just a whirlwind of peripherals enter the market, the VR market. So, I mean, it'd be who of, you know, anyone with a tracking system to start opening it up. So, I mean, I imagine everyone's going to fall in line. Oculus Vive.
I think there have been some articles about them teasing that they might do something. Right. So.
With HTC, I think particularly... Yeah, with like, I think it was back in December when they had an event in China and they showed off the trash can with the Vive controller.
Oh, yeah,
like I was like, oh yes, it's happening. Well, then nothing happened.
I love like so they've just announced a business edition that's going out.
Oh yeah,
you know, and so it's like, well,
with 24/7 customer support.
Yeah, exactly.
That's their attitude.
Call them anytime and have a chat about VR. But there's a variety of uses. Like some companies are doing architectural design and they want to do something different than this company. It would make sense that they need to be able to support the variety of uses for VR, because really there's not a single industry that's not going to be touched by VR.
Yeah.
And being able to say, yep, come this way, you can enhance what you're doing with our technology, it needs to happen.
And I guess VR arcades in the next couple of years will serve as a really pivotal part of the community to get people outside of VR into VR, like, because it still doesn't make sense to anyone else outside of, like, if you're a new time listener to this podcast, you're probably like, what the hell are these guys talking about? Because it's so ingrained in tech, you know, all the super detailed details, but like, But it doesn't. VR doesn't make sense unless you actually try it, or you see a cool video with, like, you know, mixed reality where it's like from the outside you can understand like someone's doing the motions. But these VR arcades are going to serve as the building blocks for people to actually understand what immersive computing is going to be like.
Absolutely.
And especially they're going to be a big thing in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we put Martin and I, you know, we put, you know, tons of people through, you know, our little demos and everything, and then they're just, you know, we tell them beforehand what's going to happen, and they're like, oh, you know, okay, and then they get out of it, and it's like, I get it.
Wow.
You know, yeah. it's you know, so compelling that, you know, they just understand what's going on. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's going to take a lot of brick and mortar facilities to really open up the public's eye.
What do you guys expect? Or what do you want to happen in the next literally year? It's almost hard to like broadcast for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. What do you want to happen in the next year in this space that might not even benefit your companies, but like just excites you about the space and you want it to happen? Let's start with you.
I mean, there's quite a bit. I'm trying to think of something that doesn't benefit.
I want them to clone dinosaurs.
Right. But yeah, I would just, I mean, absolutely what we're talking about, just opening up tracking. Like, I mean, I think that's a huge thing because that starts merging the digital out of home, you know, the arcade environment to the home. And I think that is the next step.
Right.
So that's definitely one of them. And, you know, making better visuals too, you know, iterating on the headsets. So,
Mike?
So I'm going to go with, like, virtual reality has this ability to be in your personal space like no other medium that I've seen.
Right.
And there's a few things standing in the way of making that actually orders of magnitude better. So part of that's eye tracking. Because right now, the optics aren't really good at getting things in your personal space because they're basically two cameras shooting parallel to each other, and that's hard to bring things up close to your face to examine it. So I think to really be in that space as yourself in the experience, we need eye tracking and we need good hand tracking in your personal space. Well, that's what I want to see, and I hope it happens.
You're talking about bringing things up close to you, but that's more of an accommodation issue with your eyes rather than eye tracking, right? Because like with the current VR setups that we have, all you do is convert your eyes, not the lenses in your eyes don't accommodate. So when something is too close, you can't even focus on it.
Yeah, it's
or
just
what are you talking?
Well, so and we should be able to, like, when we know where your eyes are looking, then we can adjust the image to make it up close to you. So like if you try to, like, for example, adjust the IPD or the interpupillary distance, basically the distance between your eyes a little bit, it throws off your sense of how big that world is. So if you move them farther apart, you feel like a giant.
Oh, so
if you move them closer,
okay,
you feel like you're an ant. But right now that's basically all we can do. So you can focus on objects that are closer and smaller, but you feel like an ant because the size of the world adjusts. So being able to render the proper image for if your eyes were converging, like, that would sell this personal space that VR can do that I've not felt in any other medium.
Cool. And Martin, what do you want in the next year to be out there?
Our product. But specifically, you know, I really think that it's really important for VR to be extremely fun. And I think that making it fun will popularize the medium and you know, make it accessible to everybody. And I think that'll lead to education. I think that leads to VR as a successful medium in general. And are we on top of a club?
We actually
did just turn like 6 o'clock.
The base just dropped.
Which is why we're bringing this podcast to an end, so that we don't have to battle ourselves.
With
whoop whoop whoop. Thank you guys, Kyle, Martin, and Mike from Striker VR and TriHelix for joining us for another episode of Research VR. We'll see you guys next week. And
thanks
stay tuned.
Much.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Cheers.